like to read to you another letter from Swami Satchidananda, from Anandashram in the ashram from the south of India. And each time he writes me, it seems as though he's speaking directly to my soul. So I like to share these. Begins, Lord of the Universe, Papa, beloved Ram, in a quote from Swami Ramdas, indeed, there is no greater life than that which is devoted to the service of God in humanity. The vision of God in the universe and beyond is the basis for this glorious life. Your loving letter of 21st July was duly received. Subtler than internet is our thought. The moment I think of you, you are here, and that moment is full of joy. Time and distance is no bar. One of the spiritual disciplines prescribed by the wise sages is to daily think of saints and devotees. Their very thought purifies our mind and makes us one with them. Happy to hear all about your plans to visit India in the fall of 1998. The best time to stay in the ashram is from October to February. Till October, rains may be there, and after February, summer heat will begin. End of December will be very crowded because of beloved Papa's Sannyas Day function. So your visit may be planned in such a way as you are here from 1st October to 15th December or in January. Glad the party will consist of Larry Kohler and Kate Kohler, Phyllis Victory, yourself, and Marge Ranney. It will be a great joy to meet you all. After spending some days in the ashram, all of you can visit the holy places mentioned by you. Swami Vishwananda is the right person to take you to different places, as he himself has traveled a lot and is familiar with the places and people there. In the course of our sadhana, a time comes when we feel like taking a leap into the sea instead of simply standing in the shore and looking at or touching the water. This is breaking the small circle and embracing infinity. This leap means placing ourselves entirely in the hands of God and dedicating our life fully for the service of the Lord. There is no wonder you are prompted to take such a step when you are listening to the kirtan at Prem's place. God has been preparing you slowly and steadily for this. Now you are like a child, walking on the path, holding the hand of the mother, carefree. That your mother, my own mother, I wrote him about, has some anxiety about the step you have taken is natural. But when she also understands things and sees you happier, she will give up her anxiety and be happy. All the necessary help and guidance will come from God at the proper time through his chosen instruments. Glad your work is going on blissfully, and many friends who are none but chosen instruments of God come forward with generous donations. I was not aware of the legal conflict going on between the two factions of devotees of Paramahansa Yogananda. I only knew that Mother Hamilton could not continue her connections with the SRF and decided to be on her own. It is very unfortunate that the true trusted disciples of the Master should have stooped to meddle with his writings. As it is said that truth finally wins, the court has rightly decreed that an unaltered version, original versions of Master's teachings can also be printed. Such conflicts do arise in spiritual institutions in India also. Man's nature is the same whether it is in the East or the West. A huge organization in Kerala was taken over recently by the government because of a fight between two factions of the disciples of the Guru who attained Mahasamadhi 70 years ago. It is very shameful. People forget the purpose for which they joined the organizations and are carried away by the desire for power and self, the strong weapon of Maya. God must be brought about, must have brought about such situations only to make the disciples understand that spiritual attainment is not a joke and one has to give up all desires, underlined, if one wants to progress. Desire is our worst enemy. They are so latent in us that we are made to feel that we are desireless, but some unguarded moments bring them out so forcefully that they cannot be resisted. God's grace alone can save us from such pitfalls, and God unfailingly guides sincere aspirants. We pray for Paramahansa Yogananda, beloved Papa's blessings on you all, for consistent guidance and speedy progress leading to the highest realization. Deepest love and best wishes ever yourself, Swami Satchidananda. And a card that I found in a store that I thought was funny and also true. And it says, I've always wanted to be normal, but lately I've had a strong suspicion that this is it. And this comes from a new book out, Journey to Self-Realization, Discovering the Gifts of the Soul. And they are collected talks and essays of Paramahansa Yogananda. The Wisdom Way to Overcome Karma. This is from a talk given in June 6, 1943. Much has been written about the law of karma, but I am afraid that the karmic theory, as sagely explained by the masters of India, has been so distorted by non-understanding minds that the Western peoples have garnered a wrong idea about this great cosmic principle of cause and effect. You have relegated the word karma to a limited meaning, to refer only to the past, but this is erroneous. Karma, in general, means action, not merely the effects of past actions. It can refer to action performed in the past or now or what might be done in the future. When you say water, you may be referring to water in general, or you may specifically mean fresh water or salt water or any other kind of water. So the real meaning of karma is any action you perform and the sum total of all your actions, both good and bad, present and past. Actions that you are performing now are called present karma. Actions that you have already performed are called past karma. And when you refer to the effects of past actions, you would say, this is the result of my past karma. Even then, you are not telling what kind of karma, beneficial or pain-producing. Then comes the question, what are the springs of action? What influences you to act and behave in a certain way? Now we have launched into the heart of the matter. You act in a certain way today, and you say, I have been acting this way all my life. We get into the deeper water when I ask you to consider the influences on those actions. There are two ways you work, prompted by your own free choice and by influences. So many subtle influences are interwoven with your decisions that it is very difficult for you to judge which actions are performed according to your own free choice and which are performed under karmic compulsion of the past or any other influences. It is rare to see a truly free man. Most people think they are free, while their minds are utterly fettered by psychological chains. These are harder to get rid of than any ordinary chains, for in their subtlety, they are difficult even to recognize, not to speak of how to destroy them. It requires a great deal of knowledge to cut those psychological restraints. There may be a million years of actions of past lives pursuing you. That is why an ordinary individual finds himself so helpless to destroy the binding effects of his karma. He feels hopelessly bound by those invisible chains, influences resulting from all the actions he chose to perform in past lives, through free will or through prevailing influences. As tabloid tendencies, the actions you have performed in the past are present in the brain. Diagnosing those karmic influences is not a simple matter. But according to your salient features, inclinations, and moods, you can detect what propensities have been trailing you and how strong in influences they are on your present life and your present actions. Now, in addition to your karma from the past, what are the influences on your present life? World civilization is one of them. In whatever era man is born, he is influenced by the civilization of that age. If he is born in the 8th century, he is influenced by that century. You are all dressing, for example, according to present civilization. You have more materials to choose from than in past centuries. You are thinking more of comfort and style than of mere warmth and necessity. Similarly, you are all eating now according to your present civilization. For instance, there is no talk about vitamins in the 6th century. So your present consciousness and actions and behavior are influenced by this present day society. The next strong influence upon a man is nationality. The soul identifies itself with the body and says, I am an American, or I am Hindu, and so on. It is not easy to get rid of that influence or that identification. But why should you think that you are an American, or a Canadian, or an Indian, or a Frenchman? And why did I used to think I was a Hindu? I used to think, because I am one with all mankind. I have trained myself that way, not to be prejudiced by nationality, race, or any other circumscription that limits the universality of the soul. I am subtly telling you how to overcome your karma too. Always remain universal in your attitude and habits of life, then you become free. The soul has worn so many garbs. Today you are an American, and in the next life possibly Chinese, and so on. That is why it is unwise to hate any nationality, for hate attracts just as love attracts. Anything you hate, you attract to yourself, and that you may learn to overcome your prejudice. This is the law. For instance, those who hate a dark race will be born in that race, invariably. The greater the hatred, the stronger will be the karmic attraction to that object hated. The origin of light and dark races was influenced by climatic conditions. Climate will so change that someday it will be natural to see white races in the east and dark races in the west. That will happen, but many years from now. Then man is influenced by community in which he lives. He is influenced by his neighbors. If he lives in an aristocratic neighborhood, he tends to behave in an aristocratic way. If he lives among businessmen, he behaves like them. Different kinds of people have different kinds of habits that influence you. Mix with artists and you will think that the only way to be. I am not condemning artists, but they need to be more practically minded. You cannot live on beauty alone. I slept and dreamed that life was beauty. I woke and found that life was duty. You must see beauty and duty. Remain in the company of spiritual persons, and you will think spiritual thoughts. Environment is stronger than willpower. If you want to be spiritual, seek good company, and don't mix with those whose bad habits may wrongly influence you. You are also strongly influenced by your family. You think that you belong to a particular group of people, the family unit. They have put a trademark on you, and their habits encumber you. Lastly, everyone is drunk with some habits. Sometimes man is crazy about money, and sometimes he is crazy for love, and then for fame, and so on. All the time battered and bludgeoned by the influence of his own habitual past actions of this life and past lives. That is the hypnosis of karma. Where is your freedom? How little freedom you have left. The freedom that God has given to you as his own, to touch the Milky Way and to feel your presence in the flowers and in the stars, that freedom is gone completely because of the many influences upon you. Most people are like psychological antiques, brittle with set ideas, with set influences. The minute you sit on them, they break. That is why our Indian astrologers say we are all puppets. I do not believe that. I believe you can destroy any karma you want to. If you close all the doors and windows in a room, darkness is there. But if you bring in the light, the darkness is gone instantly. Even the darkness that has permeated a cave for thousands of years is vanquished immediately when the light is brought in. Will you reason that it will take a light 100 years to destroy those eons of darkness? That is foolish. So, we may have karma of past lives. Under whatever civilization, nationality, community, and family we have lived, and of this life, with the influences of this present civilization, nationality, community, and family. But if we realize we are gods, we will be free from that karma now. Every human being is made in the image of God. If you find that image within you, how can you have any karma? God, as the master of this universe, has no karma. If you know that you are one with God, there can be no karma for you. A venomous snake is not affected by the poison within it. It is also true that while delusion, or Maya, is in the manifestation of God in creation, and that it affects us, it does not affect him. That is not fair, is it? That is why he has given us salvation. But it will not come unless we demand it. Being made in God's image, we can be free from karma, provided we claim our divine heritage from him. You have been led to believe exactly the opposite. To believe in karma is to give it strength. Why should you believe you are bound? You should think, I am not a mortal being, I am a child of God. Then you cut the root of karma. Beyond the flights of fancy, formless am I, permeating all limbs of life, no freedom do I crave, nor bondage to our fear, for I am free, ever conscious, ever new bliss, I am free. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. But as soon as you give in to the delusion that you are a human being, you have permitted all the karma of the past to envelop you. This life is a den of thieves. Its influences rob you of your divine inheritance. When you say, I don't belong here, you make an effort to get out. You will no longer be an unwilling captive. I'd like to speak this evening on From Captivity to Freedom. When we begin our spiritual quest, we feel as if perhaps we are in a dark cave, that we have been confined and consumed by this world. It is like entering into the dark whale, as the ancient story is told, until finally through faith that whale spew up that individual onto the land once again, so that they might have their freedom. We get caught in snares of Maya. Perhaps we enter into the spiritual path and we feel some freedom come our way. We get some peace. We feel some light come into our being. When we get that, we feel as if this has always been true. It has always been our state, and we can't imagine it never being true again. And yet, just as surely as we are lifted up, so we get caught in delusion's snare once again. And we go into a land of darkness. And while in that darkness we can barely remember the light within our own being, perhaps we lose hope and we become discouraged. You know, discouragement is one of the world's great diseases. You can teach an individual about freedom. You can teach them about attaining their own God realization, or on any level. This is true. If a person has hope, if they are open to a higher influence within themselves. But when we become discouraged, we lose all sight of anything new happening in our life. And this is the greatest and the darkest prison that we can enter into. Discouragement robs the soul of its spirit. It robs us of any vision of anything new coming. And no matter how well reasoned the discussion, no matter how beautifully spoken the words, that person who feels discouraged cannot hear them. They are beyond it. For such an individual, many, many lifetimes may be their due in order to awaken before they are shaken free of their discouragement. Because discouragement, like all other emotional states, are delusive states. They are not our true character. God designing this universe and placing individual consciousness within it is like the grandfather who sits out on the back porch watching all of his grandchildren play out in the backyard that's secure with a hedge. All the children are safe there. One will claim a toy bike and claim it as its own, and another will challenge it and try to take it away. So others are setting aside playing cooperatively with each other. Some others are getting into a fist fight, into a corner, and so on and so forth. All the variations and varieties of life going on within this backyard. But knowing that it is going on in the backyard, knowing that they are all his children, he watches, and he comes to the aid and support of any who call upon him to do so. But if someone calls upon him to come and help, and then they take matters in their own hands, then he sits in his rocking chair, smoking his pipe, and watches them work it out amongst themselves. But if one sits and cries and calls for their grandfather or their grandmother, then they surely respond, if none else can help them in their need. And so it is with us in our search for God. As long as we feel that we are the doers, as long as we feel that we are the ones who can make things happen, then we will be caught in that web of doership. But once we lose that, once we see that the ego cannot kill the ego, that the ego can surrender and call upon its parent, to call upon its great-grandmother or great-grandfather to come and grant it its grace, then that grace will surely descend into the soul. But as long as there is any sense of doership and ownership, then that help does not come. We need to become as a cup, completely emptied. Not only that, but this cup needs to be scoured out. Because even if there are any germs left in the cup of doership, any germs left of us as separate from the infinite, then that will grow and grow and assume a new identity, a new sense of ego. This path and this way of looking at things can be extremely subtle, as Master was talking about in the writing tonight. These influences come from hundreds and thousands, perhaps, of years and lifetimes of experiences. But to think in a mechanical way that, well, for every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. Now, this is true in a worldly sense. And for mankind, this is the truth. But when you let go of your humanity, when you let go of the sense of doership and your sense of individuality, you lift yourself into a new realm. And in that new realm, you experience a new set of laws. And in that new set of laws, you can experience grace immediately, right here, right now. And so you take on faith as a simple child, and you look upon this world as a child. in Swamiji's letter, I read where he was talking about taking on the attitude of a child and was describing my own case where I had become as a child. And without me telling him about this, he diagnosed me exactly right. When I got the injunction from God to break out of my life, my old life, that of working as a therapist and getting a steady paycheck and all the rest of it, to devoting myself toward achieving, first of all, my own full God realization, and secondly, to serve all those whom God brings to me, I hadn't a clue as to how to make this happen. The first response that I had was, God, I haven't any idea how to make this happen. And so from that point forward, I felt like I was a child, because there came within me an inner assurance. Sometimes people ask, how it is that you know that it is God that is speaking to you? Well, Mother used to say that we needed to test each and every spirit that comes to us. And so one is it matching scriptures? Is it matching the Bible or some Hindu scripture or whatever faith we have, whether it is Sufism or Islam or Buddhism? Do we find correspondence there? Secondly, is it confirmed by a saint? And in this case, through this letter, I consider Swami Satchidananda a great saint, and his ability to tune into my own consciousness is terrific. And as he talked about, closer than the internet. And this is true. With the internet, you get printed words. With inner communion, you get the spirit. You get the presence of that individual. You can know their thoughts through that inner internet. But more than that, you can tune into their spirit, to their soul. And this is the higher way of thinking about things. One time, they were talking to Papa, and some disciples said, Papa, you know the thoughts of everyone who comes before you. And Papa replied quickly, you will not catch him at it. He said, you are wrong. I do not read the thoughts, because if I were tuned into the thoughts of everyone who came, it would drag me to a lower level. That would be operating on the mental level. But I am operating on the spiritual level, he explained. And through that, I tune into the spirit, to the soul of each individual, and I can quickly assess the spiritual progress of each individual. And it is the truth. When you yourself are spiritually attuned, you sense that vibration. When you meet somebody, you feel a quickening of spirit. Or if that person is experiencing depression, you experience that also. You experience whatever it is that they are involved with. If they are involved in some activities that do not reflect the fullness of their own spirit, you feel that inside of you. And so all these impressions come for you. But you don't do it as a means of intrusiveness on another soul. If it is given to you to work with that individual, then you get something about them so that you are better able to help them. Otherwise, you let it go because you do not invade in another. I had a graphic example of that. Before I had met Mother, I had been set out on a spiritual quest to find a teacher. Because in my soul, no matter how many books that I read and no matter how many words that I got around all of this, I felt there was something missing. And so I went to this person and that, and for about 4 months before I met my own guru. But during that time, I met a guru who was honored by many who came through town. And as he talked, I was nonplussed by him, and so I did not care to follow him. So I went on my way, and a couple of years after meeting my own guru, he came actually here to Vancouver. And so I was living in Bellingham at the time, and I decided to come up here, and I thought it would be interesting now to kind of test the difference a little bit, you know, see how that experience would be. Well, I came to the talk with a friend, and we listened, and I was equally nonplussed as the first time. As he was leaving that gathering, he was walking about 10 feet away, and there's a group of people between he and I as he was leaving. Suddenly, there was a parting of the people, almost as the parting of the waves, and he stopped and he turned and he looked at me. And I could feel him on a psychic level rummaging around in my soul. And I say rummaging because it did not feel invited. It did not feel, I certainly didn't invite him, and it didn't feel respectful. It felt like an invasion. And I recognized immediately that even though I felt my own guru, my own teacher, deeply inside of myself, nevertheless, I never once felt invaded by her, nor was my free will in any way taken away from me. And so I called on Mother at that time just automatically, and instantly there was a white sheet of light that came down around me. And his head snapped back around, and out he walked through the room and left that room then. So it was a graphic example for me of the difference between being respectful to an individual and ways that we can invade people and invade their privacy. We should not surround ourselves with people who invade us on a consistent basis. We need to protect ourselves. One of the ways to protect ourselves is, as I described, is to surround yourself with light. If you feel that either from a distance or from an immediate vicinity, sometimes you'll get it that somebody has turned their mind to you and your mind is attuned to them. And sometimes it can be a positive influence, sometimes negative. If it is negative, you can surround yourself in light. The other thing that you can do, as Master taught, is start with your palms on your belly button and work them around to your back. And as you do so, you chant Om Tat Sat. Now this means Father, Mother, and the Holy Ghost. Or the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, rather. And it's the same meaning, but it's Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. And repeat it three times, moving your hands in that direction. And that will help protect you from outside influences. Also, you can burn some incense and visualize that light around you and pray to God to protect you at this time. It's no joke when you feel someone is trying to influence you in a negative way. And if you expose yourself to that on a consistent basis, it will weaken your will. And through that, it will retard your progress. As you come under the influence of a negative person in that way, you can get into real trouble. So the thing is this. Does the people and the circumstances around you tend to uplift you? Does it tend to ennoble you? Does it tend to bring out the best in you? And if it doesn't, then I think you need to seriously question your association. An alcoholic would not go to a tavern or some place where there is a lot of alcohol being consumed, because that person knows directly the power of influence of those circumstances and those people. And likewise, when you are trying to lead a spiritual life, then you try to associate as much as you can with spiritually charged people. And when you do that, you take on that charge. It strengthens the charge in you. And also, as your charge gets strengthened, you help support that in others. So when you come to this meditation, you come not just to receive, but you come also to give the power and the beauty and the wisdom of God within you. And you let that light shine out and permeate everyone and everything in this room. You know, to get into the universal vision is at first a thing that we look for with our mind. And by the universal vision, I mean that we see that God is in every person and in every circumstance. Now, this is not easy. Perhaps when you're in a group such as this and you feel the spiritually charged vibrations, it may be something that seems natural to you. But then you go outside and then you go to the nearest convenience store, and perhaps the clerk is in a bad mood and they, you know, give you some words that are not kind, and suddenly you're ensnared right back into the world again. Or you go home and you feel uplifted and you feel peaceful, and suddenly your children are raising their voices or your spouse is snipping at you, and the next thing you know, you're ensnared back into the world of duality. So it is no joke, it is no easy thing to maintain that consciousness. But if we take every circumstance in our life as either a test to test us in our adherence towards our oneness with the spiritual consciousness, that you place God first, that inner feeling of peace, that inner feeling of spirit comes first. That's where your mind is focused. And circumstances outside of you are reflections of that. And so you radiate yourself out to the world from you. Instead of the worldly person lives from the outside in. And by that, whatever people they're around, they try to accommodate those people. They try to form themselves into being like them. They want to be accepted, and they want to be a part of the whole. Spiritual people live from the inside out, and that is that they contact God first, and they manifest that spirit outside of them. Someone who lives from the outside in, for instance, may decorate their home in a beautiful way. But their identity comes from the beauty of their home, and if that beauty is disturbed in any way, they become disturbed. If for some reason they lose that by burning down or through bankruptcy or something like that, then they feel as if they've lost themselves. Someone who's living a spiritual life lives from the inside out, and so they contact first that beauty inside of them, and then they manifest it out. And if it gets disturbed or destroyed on the outside, then they simply take whatever is given to them and they manifest it again, because they're not getting informed about who and what they are from the outside in, but rather it's from the inside out. So whether it's in your work, or whether in your family, or in your community, or as a world citizen, you bring the light of God within you, and you make it manifest in this world. Or you bring nothing but darkness inside of you, and you make that manifest. It is up to you, and it is up to each one of us what we choose to do. Are we blessings to this earth, or are we a curse to it? We choose. And we can blame other people for our bad mood, or we can blame other people for our circumstances from here until eternity, but it will not change one God-blessed thing in our lives. Not until we take full responsibility for ourselves and turn that inside. The world of psychology is focused on building human beings, but the world of spirituality goes beyond that. It goes into building God beings, because you are inherently made up of God stuff. Therefore, whatever you bring into this world gets reflected back to you. And that is why, as long as you're working on a human standard, you may look for years and years of working through issues, getting through darkness, and all the rest of it. And it may be on a human level, as Freud says, that you're nothing but a bunch of complexes, and that ultimately the best you can do is limit the amount of your neurosis. That's quite a vision. It's quite a vision, but who would want it? Instinctively, inherently, we yearn for something greater. Now, we all make errors in living this life. And so this idea of perfection isn't necessarily in this mental idea of what's perfect. Rather, it is achieving that inner awareness of perfection and then letting it shine out from us. You see, when we evaluate things from the mental level, we are always involved in duality. Duality means that for every positive, there is its shadow of negative. And for every upliftment, there's a downturn. When you light a fire in a chimney, in a fireplace, and the smoke goes up through the chimney, the smoke gradually accumulates within that chimney. And as it does so, it can actually clog that chimney from having any upward motion at all. Or it can catch fire in itself and burn down and destroy the dwelling that's in it. Rather, a fire that is lit outdoors goes up into the air, but the air is unstained. It doesn't accumulate anything. The smoke merely passes through it, and when it's gone, it's disappeared. Make your minds like the outdoors, like the air, rather than like the chimney. The attached mind is like the chimney. It clings on and hangs on to all the passing thoughts and fantasies and desires that come along. But the clean outdoors is like the spiritual mind. You may have feelings and thoughts that pass through. You cannot help it. This mind is constantly at work, always manufacturing new ideas. And yet, if you make your mind spotless, focused on the spiritual, you will never be stained by any of the thoughts. You will always be clear as soon as those thoughts pass through. So make your mind like the clean outdoors. Imagine yourself to be that expansive atmosphere, that it contains no pollution, that is ever free, ever clear. You know, one of the images that was helpful to me in my working world is I would think of the name Paramahansa. Now, Master's title was Paramahansa, which means highest swan or greatest swan. And in Hindu mythology, the swan is seen as being able to take milk from the lake water and separate it out and drink only the milk and leave the lake water there untouched. But the image that came to my mind was of a swan swimming upon the water gracefully, beautifully. And as I walked into the place where I worked, I thought of that image and I thought of that swan gracefully swimming along the surface, in touch with the surface, but not drowning in all the details, all the mire, certainly not in the mud at the bottom of everything that's there, but just floating along the top. And somehow that image inside of me helped me to maintain that non-attached, dispassionate place where I could engage in the world, but not be dominated by it, not forget who and what I am. Now, this takes constant and steady practice. And when we become angry, when we become afraid, we can know for sure that we have become attached to something. Now, the human part of us says, isn't it okay to be attached to this life? I mean, this is all that I have, right? And the answer is no, that is not true. That when you get in touch with spiritual realms, you come to understand that you are not this body. You are not these passing thoughts or these passing feelings, but you are that eternal spirit. And as such, you exist beyond this body. You exist beyond any particular thoughts or feelings. And when you identify through that experience more and more with that eternal self, then you disidentify more and more, and you become more dispassionate to things of the world. When we think of dispassion, oftentimes we think of giving up. We think of all the things we have to let go of. We think of all the things that are now enjoyed that we cannot enjoy any longer. And this is an incorrect way of thinking about it. For any little thing that we become dispassionate about, that we give up in that sense, we gain an eternal freedom and a bliss and joy that comes into the soul and comes into our being. And so it is not just a matter of giving up. It's not just a matter of don'ts. It is an affirmative do's. All the things that we begin to enjoy in the spiritual sense. And then, once having attained self-mastery, then we enjoy this world, but we don't get dominated by it. We do not become stained by it, but rather it is as that clean, fresh air that is never stained by the smoke passing through it. So you see, it doesn't take millennia to rectify all the different wrongs that have been done to us, but it takes just one touch of the Infinite Master within us, that spiritual consciousness, until we are so lifted up and purified in thought, in word, in deed, that there is no separation within us. And then we enter into this world and we see that spirit manifesting in everything that we see, everything that we do. And it becomes our universal vision. This is the truth of who and what we are. Only who knows it? Who has realized it? When I was giving a talk down in Portland, a while ago, I had an interview afterwards, and one of the individuals said, he said, you know, I've read it all, I've heard it all. And I could talk about this just as well. But my response was, who has realized it? It's not just a matter of intellectually taking it in. And she admitted that she had not realized it. You see, just taking it in mentally and reading about things is not enough. You have to realize it in the depths of your soul. And when you talk then, you realize that you are doing nothing but talking to yourself, because you see yourself manifested in everyone. And you do not talk for any other purpose than that you feel inspired to do so, that you feel God prompting you to do so. And you expect no outcome, no benefit from it, other than the fulfillment of that inner desire to do so. And in this way, you let go of all results. You abandon everything unto God. And whether it's one person who comes or 1,000 people who comes, it makes no difference. And if no one came, and I sat and was by myself, then I would feel the fullness of God within me. Because that freedom is inside. And in one way, words count for nothing unless they inspire you to seek out in greater measure your own realization. You cannot convey a realization through words, but that can only be gained in finding it within your own soul. And so by coming together, we create a harmonious vibration of peace and of inward attention. And sometimes it's a battlefield. It's not always easy. It's not always joyful. It's not always pleasant. It can be the most tremendously difficult and challenging thing we'll ever take on. And sometimes we feel like giving up. And all the obstacles come up. And when they're inner obstacles, they can be manifest as fear, as boredom, as indifference, as anger, as greed. And they all come along. And the temptations are there. These stories, whether it's about Jesus or about Buddha or about Mohammed are all the same. They are those ones who have gone the extra mile and that final mile until they have realized completely who and what they are. So it should not be taken lightly. And it has to become our first and foremost thought about our lives if we are to make progress. Now, there are many who make progress without ever thinking necessarily of a spiritual thought. Perhaps they have come into this world as karma yogis, so to speak. And if they live good, honest lives, and if they fulfill their part in this world in a clean, orderly way, then they grow as individuals. But for souls who have become attracted to this path, this is no longer the ultimate for them. The ultimate lies beyond that, and it goes beyond all thoughts of creation, all thoughts of who you currently think you are. Take it as a fact that whoever you think you are now, you are not that. And even if you have the thought that I am soul, or I am spirit, or I am one with God, that thought cannot reflect that truth. Only until you are that, you have created a being of being that, can you say that, and then there is no more a need to say it, because you are that. So get rid of thought. Get rid of all the past. Let it go. And focus in on the light within you. Now, sometimes intrusiveness thoughts come in so much that we need to talk them out. We need to work them out. And in that way, therapy, psychotherapy, and that thing kind of thing can be helpful. But in terms of reaching out for that light, ultimately it is going within us. And in that moment that light comes into your consciousness, you become that. And then it is a matter of being or not being. Either you are that light or you're not that light. But there is no becoming that light in that sense. And in any particular moment you experience that light, you are that light. You're the fullness of it. So don't think that it comes gradually. But what seems to be gradual is that you will experience that upliftment, you will experience that light, and then you will alternately enter back down into darkness again. And so it is that back and forth. But don't think that you failed. Don't think that you've gotten off the path. True enough, you have become attracted and enmeshed in the world in some way again. But this is the nature of everyone who pursues this thing. And so don't get down on yourself, because every moment you have that thought of being down on yourself, you're keeping yourself from being in the light. You're absorbed in your own thoughts. Get rid of your thoughts. Let them go. Pick yourself back up, dust yourself off, face again towards the light. Don't give it a second thought. If you can learn from it, great. If you can identify where your mind's got turned away from the light, and you can identify that, that's wonderful. Other than that, don't give it a second thought. Guilt has no room here. You know, guilt and shame can be beneficial for those who are strictly operating on a human level. Because if we didn't have that, we would have a world full of sociopaths, if you think about it. No one would ever feel bad about anything. Nobody would ever feel sorry about anything. And so they would just go on and continue doing the same acts over and over again. But when you get on the spiritual path, you don't have to deal with that shame, because you are being guided by inner wisdom. And that inner wisdom becomes the part of you who self-corrects. Also, your compassion reaches out to all people, so even the thought of harming another individual is just inconceivable to you. So feelings of thought and thoughts of shame are just not even necessary there. Now, that's not to say that they can just disappear in a day unless and until that light comes in. And when that light of consciousness is there, you feel the purity and the freedom and the expansion of your own spirit. And you are again one with that. I wanted to just read you something that Mother once wrote. I've tried to dig within each one of you who has come to me and find out where they kept this hidden glory, what their special talents were, and then to encourage them to develop them so that they might become themselves. It's terrible to walk in fear, to live in fear. If God is directing you to do something within yourself, for heaven's sakes, do it. And stop fearing the results, because if he is directing you, he will also take care of it. He will take care of everything and everyone about that particular circumstance if you will only have faith in him. There is no holding back, none whatsoever. That hidden power works miracles, even when we don't know it. So either knowingly or unknowingly, you have a miracle working within you. And rely on that. Search it out. And when you go inside inwardly, don't make it a mechanical thing. If you're meditating morning and night, don't make it just a thing that you do to check off on your to-do list. But rather, seek out your own inner temple. Seek out your own inner peace. Make it a living thing. And as Master used to say, don't go to sleep until you have contacted God, until you have felt some sense of upliftment, some sense of peace, some sense of transformation. And when you wake up in the morning, spend time with God. This should be a time that is sacred and treasured, and not something to do just to check off on the to-do list, you know? It should be something that you enter into. So take into it the proper spirit. And when you enter into your life, take God with you. Take that feeling with you. Don't leave him on your meditation blanket as you go out into the world. Your entire life is your ashram. Your teachers are there. Your students are there. Your soul is manifested in everyone whom you meet. Shift your attitude and watch your life change. Our attitude is within our grasp. And if we ignore that, then we ignore one of the greatest secrets that we have going on within us. So make yourself aware of who and what you are. And then take that out and make it something that is living for you. As Master said here in the reading, quoting from Swami Shankara, I am not a mortal being. I'm a child of God. Beyond the flights of fancy, formless am I, permeating all limbs of life. No freedom do I crave, nor bondage do I fear, for I am free, ever conscious, ever new bliss. I am free, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. So let us free ourselves and become that immortal soul that the great saints and sages have realized about themselves and have led the way for the rest of us. They have pointed the way. When Jesus said, I am the way, he wasn't just saying, join this religion. He's saying his life is the way. He is the example He is that exalted being whom we all are becoming. When he said, I am the truth, again, he wasn't talking about joining a particular religion. He's saying that he became the truth through his own inner realization, and that we are that also. So let us focus our minds on that and become that. And lastly, he said, he is life. And he says, you will have life and life more abundantly. When you contact this spiritual presence inside of you, you will have life more abundantly. You will feel in contact not only with your life, but all of life. So I'd like to stop there and see if there are any questions. There may be new people or people who have been practitioners and working on this. And I can assure you, if there's a stumbling block or a question in your mind, it's reflected in others' minds also, since we're all one. We can't separate ourselves. Once had a teacher when there was no questions, and he says, well, that means everybody either knows everything or knows nothing. Of course, in spiritual thought, those are one and the same thing, aren't they? Well, it's lovely to come here and to share in this vibration. We provide books that are out in the back that, if you wish, they're available. The main thing is we want people to have access to them. Sometimes they're hard to find. So they're available on a donation basis. And if you have no money, then that's all right too. There's three rules that Mother gave me in terms of carrying on this work. One was no organization, no name, no board of directors, none of that. The other was no advertising. And the third was not to charge for anything. And in that way, the idea is to keep the mind on God and achieving God realization. You know, when you form organizations and that kind of thing, pretty soon somebody's president and vice president and secretary, and there's a pecking order and on down the line, and people just get encouraged. Sometimes we think, oh, wouldn't it be lovely to be in an ashram? Well, ashrams are not all that lovely all the time. They are intense proving grounds, and they're difficult places to be. So just to live our lives and to live them more purely, more perfectly, more attuned to God and to the spiritual presence. You cannot tell from the outside someone's attainment. That anybody you meet on the street, your bus driver, the person driving another car, the clerk, you cannot tell unless you yourself are spiritually attuned, and then you might feel that vibration inside of them. But God is everywhere. So do not limit that to just this one or that one, or do not think that you'll see something extraordinary about them. What happens is inside, it's spiritual. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. It doesn't necessarily mean worldly accomplishment. It means spiritual accomplishment. So if you want to see with a spiritual vision, not as the world sees. And what you'll have happen is a whole new realm will open up before you. And you'll see the world completely different. And yet in some ways, it looks just exactly the same. You know, the Buddha saying that before enlightenment, carrying water, chopping wood, after enlightenment, carrying water, chopping wood. In some ways, nothing's changed, and in some ways, everything has changed. In the most important ways, everything's changed. And most of all, you've discovered your true identity.